Blog Talk Radio.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Report from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Hello and welcome to Provocative Thought, intimately known as PT, striving to awaken those who are asleep, stimulate those who are awakened, feed those who are starving, and nurture those who seek to know. I am your host, Carlton Steed, a self-proclaimed student of life in the search, discovery, and revelation of life on life's terms. First, I'd like to thank We Talk Productions for allowing me to host this show. I'd also like to thank the creator for allowing me to be. You can contact the show by dialing 909-265-9215. Please press the number 1 to speak. You can contact the show by dialing 909-265-9215. Please press the number 1 to speak. You can reach us on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to search, type in We Talk Productions, and listen to the show live. You can also contact us on Facebook at Provocative Thought PT Community Organization. Tonight's topic: why are some black neighborhoods or communities not a safe place for blacks? Everyone seeks refuge from the horror of the extreme elements. Blacks have been enslaved, lynched, murdered, tortured, humiliated, and raped for centuries. why has the black community not become a refuge for its people? Some black communities appear to be in crisis 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Neighborhood is a vicinity or region, place of origin. People live near one another. So it's geographical, basically a geographical area that people are tied to. Community, I use it both words because community is a little something different. It's a unified body of individuals such as, you know, community of, you know, the Mormon community, stuff could have things like that, you know. But people with common interests live in a particular area. So it's more than just people living in a geographical area. A community, people have common interests and they have a stake in the interest that they live in. It's a group of people with a common characteristic or interest living together within a larger society, right? A body of persons of common and especially professional interests scattered through the larger society. You know, you have different, like you got the, what, the Masonics and, you know, different groups of people, right? Body of persons of common, especially professional interests scattered throughout a larger society. A body of persons or nations having a common history or common social, economic, or and political interests. A group linked by a common policy and interacting population of various kinds of individuals, such as species, in a common location. So those are definitions of group and, I mean, neighborhood and community. Some may argue that blacks do not live in communities, they live in neighborhoods, and there is the difference that perpetuates the chaos, general disregard for rules, boundaries, respect, and self-debasing. No one is connected morally or ethically. You do not have to know someone to respect them. Why are some black neighborhoods not a safe place for blacks? I would like to state that all black neighborhoods and communities are not detrimental to the health and welfare of the black community, because I don't know all black neighborhoods. But tonight we're speaking about those neighborhoods where this situation does exist, where we know this exists, especially in these urban neighborhoods. Being black alone is not the sole attribute of a neighborhood that is unsafe. It would seem that being subjected to a series of intergenerational traumatic events, slavery, Jim Crow, segregation and lynching, rape, homicide, genocide, systemic oppression, deprivation, dehumanization, isolation, assimilation, chemical welfare, biological welfare, etc., in the United States of America would be enough to encourage, force, and or facilitate a need to unite for the safety and quality of black people. Yet, some predominantly black neighborhoods appear to be at risk areas or high-risk areas. Poverty appears to be a common attribute, but there are many other attributes. There is the drug, thug culture, alcohol, failure to thrive, esteem issues, identity issues, truancy, and more. Note, the drug thug culture is not solely an attribute of the impoverished black community. Drugs have no borders. Thugs have no cultural, economical, or social borders. Just want to say that because we're not trying to put blame the black community on thug and all that. Thug doesn't always wear his hat backwards or a bandana and things like that. Thugs can have a suit on. If you know anything about thug, you know what I'm saying. It's true. Anyway, what happened to the black community? Where is the new Tulsa, Oklahoma, Greenwood, and Rosewood community? Those were actual black communities, not just neighborhoods. Communities where people had a shared way of living and they had an interest in each other. Why didn't having a clear and present danger or a common enemy unite black people in the defense of black people, at least where their children lay their heads or take a stroll down the street? Why? does the black community prey on each other? Why the overt disregard and disrespect in and for the black community? Can blacks eradicate the ills of the black community? Create a safe haven for us, by us? Some say that an absence of moral and ethical standards is a cause of violence, and those standards should be taught by the parents. Parents are the first teachers. Unfortunately, now we have parents and or adults who appear to adhere to a standard of at-risk, aggressive, and violent behavior. Life does not appear to be valued as the homicide rate indicates. Other things that impact on the attitudes of people in the community appears music. There's a saying, music soothes the savage beast. That is an old saying that by some present standards appears to be quite the opposite. NPR 2006 Science Rap Music Linked to Alcohol and Violence. Mr. David Jernigan, Executive Director of the Center on Alcohol Marketing and Youth, Georgetown University, said, well, it's an interesting picture for African-American youth in that they consistently drink less than youth in general, yet they're getting exposed to considerably African-American youth get exposed considerably more to alcohol, advertisements for alcohol and drugs and things like that than youth in general. Look at the magazines in 2002. He said, we found that the African-American youth ages 12 to 20 were exposed to 60% more advertising for beer and ale and 81% more advertising for distilled spirits. And the heaviest overexposure that they get is for the cognacs and the brandies, which have been very tied in with the hip-hop and the rap culture. It is being not only glamorized, but it is quite often the personification of cool for many young people. And we know how important it is to be cool, to be in, to be all current with some young people and some of the older people. People like to wear the latest Nike sneakers, the latest clothes. Even that fashion changes, they change simply because the fashion changed, because fashion people has said, hey, we got some new stuff that's old. This is in. This is the new stuff. You cool if you wear this. Uncool if you wear that. If you wear that, what you had on yesterday or last month, because I didn't put this stuff in. So, you know, we are, some of us are stuck on being cool, which is in itself is a problem. African-American youth are hearing 50% more ads for distilled spirits on the radio than youth in general. So, is someone targeting African-American youth? Or have the rappers been exposed to these other, you know, beverages, you know, like the cognacs and the brandies? What's that, Courvoisier and stuff like that? I heard that in a rap. I think Busta Rhymes had a rap about some Courvoisier or something like that. So that kind of like glamorizes it. It makes it cool, you know. So now you're looking for a Courvoisier because, you know, you like Busta. I think it was Busta Rhymes. Anyway, you know what I'm saying. Violent and aggressive youth turn into violent and aggressive adults. That's a problem. So what's the relationship between violence and poverty? By Herbert J. Gans. Ultimately, violent crime will not decline until enough Americans realize tough measures have not worked. But until the actual threats decline significantly, imagined and displaced threats are not likely to be reduced either. The political and tragic reality is that mainstream America appears to be unwilling to give the poor a chance at a decent full-time jobs until safety threats decline. Man, that's a catch 20 too, man. The poor, however, need the jobs first. You want somebody to do better, you have to give them the tools to do better. And since we live in a capitalist society, we need money to pay for things that we need. And, you know, in the face with that problem, not having the money to pay for to get things that you need and want, some people resort to crime. And as we know, that people commit crimes in generally in the areas closest to them. Nobody's going to drive 500 miles to commit a crime on a regular basis, unless that's a pretty big crime. You know what I'm saying? The average person is going to, you know, rob somebody a couple of blocks from where they live, maybe around the corner. Some people, maybe even next door. We don't know. So, otherwise, the lure of the streets will be too strong, and the incentive to move into seemingly secure and well-paying criminal occupations too great. So, people, if you fail to do right, you can succeed at doing wrong. So, that's an option for some people. And some people will not stand to be without or to be impoverished, even though they're able to survive at a particular level in poverty. They want more, and they will seek more, like water seeking cracks through a wall, through a floor. You know, they will go gravitate to whatever it is that helps them meet that need. And I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying it happens. Black people have been poor before, but there are not the same people today. Safety should be one of the highest objectives in the community. Moral and ethical fortitude must be prevalent to maintain moral and ethical cultural standards. Haiti has a very GDP. And it's not recognized as one of the most violent places on the earth, says Peter Bunton, former national security minister. He thinks that poverty is not a precursor for violence, because Haiti has a very low gross national product. They don't have, they're very poor. They're not putting anything, sending much out, not getting much in. So he said something else, you know. Other people say, does poverty cause crime? National Dialogue Network, Maurice Ward says, in the countries where the social discrimination factor isn't very strong, results have shown that less education meant more criminal offenses, ranging from poverty, property crime, to casual theft and drug-related offenses. Again, mostly theft, but not violence. It appears that, in fact, poverty itself is more tied with violence, criminal damage, and also drug use as a catalyst for violence. Okay, so it says it's a catalyst for it. Life enrichment, reducing aggression and violence, the serotonin connection, by Lane Leonard, PhD. I'm just going to hit this real quick, and it's kind of scientific. It says 100 years of research on the brain chemistry have revealed that anything that interferes with the actions of serotonin in the brain can bring about a syndrome that resembles the Jekyll transformation to Hyde, while certainly less dramatic than the transformation described by Stevenson, the guy that wrote that book. Serotonin deficiency bears a striking resemblance in various manifestations as an increased tendency toward anxiety, depression, out of control, inhibition, and violence. Enhancing the activity of the serotonin system may have exactly the opposite effect on many people. Low levels of serotonin in the brain have been associated with an increased susceptibility to impulsive behavior, aggression, overeating, depression, alcohol abuse, and violent suicide. Medical News Today, if you don't remember what serotonin is used to transmit messages between nerve cells. It's thought to be active in constricting smooth muscles, and it contributes to well-being and happiness, among other things. As the precursor for melatonin, it helps regulate the body's sleep-wake cycles and the internal clock. It is thought to play a role in appetite, emotions, motor, cognitive, which is thinking, and autonomic functions. So you don't want to take anything that interferes with the serotonin intake. Now, this is a guy called I thought this was interesting. Mr. J.B. Calhoun began his career as an animal ecologist. He trained in zoology at Northwestern, and he moved to Johns Hopkins School for Hygiene and Public Health. He was employed as a part-time project, employed as a part of a project looking at ways to control Baltimore's rodent population. But he did a little experiment with the rats, I think with mice and rats, in 1947 with variety strains of rats and mice, right? I'm trying to get to, he described it as an experimental universe as a rat utopia and a mouse paradise. With all their visible needs met, the animals bred rapidly. The only restriction Calhoun imposed on the population was space. And as the population grew, this became increasingly problematic. Males became aggressive, some moving in groups, attacking females and the young. Many behaviors were disrupted. Some males became exclusively homosexual. Others became pansexual and hypersexual, attempting to mount any rat they encountered. Mothers neglected their infants, first failing to construct proper nests, and then carelessly abandoning and even attacking their pups. In certain sections of the pens, infant mortality rose as high as 96%. The dead cannibalized by the adults. Subordinate animals withdrew psychologically, serving in a physical sense, but at an immense psychological cost. They were the majority in the late phases of the growth, existing as vacant huddled mass in the center of the pen. So they gathered up in the center of the pen, unable to breed. The population plummeted and did not recover. The crowded rodents had lost the ability to coexist harmoniously, even after the population numbers once again fell to low levels. At a certain density, they had ceased to act like rats and mice, and the change was permanent. Now, you know, Calhoun's theory is that there's an upper limit to the number of meaningful social interactions that an individual could cope with before stress becomes a factor. This innate limit determined the maximum group size, a figure Calhoun set at 12 in both rats and man. As population density increased, it became even more difficult for an individual to control the frequency of social contact. The result was unwanted interaction leading to adverse reactions such as hostility and withdrawal, and ultimately to the type of social and psychological breakdown seen during the later stages in his crowded pens. Which is interesting, you know, because I worked in group homes, and a group home, I think we had 12 boys. And that was the max for the group home. And I wonder if that number might have came from Calhoun's experiment. Anyway, from provocative thought, that looks very much like some of the behavior observed in many neighborhoods today. But there's no drugs involved in that situation with the mice. So here's why they use mice to experiment as experiments for human beings. Rats are really quite, says Miss Kate Kushner from the where's she from How Stuff Works. So rats are really quite close to us, which I found interesting. Evolutionarily. More so than even on mice. That means that their brains function more like ours than their mouse counterparts. Rats have a counterpart to every known human gene associated with disease. You know, they do a lot of chemical studies on rats. In 2013, studies showed that rats' mouse colleagues were capable of exhibiting the full range of Alzheimer's brain changes. The same research was attempted on mice, but the mice didn't have the dramatic death of brain cells that humans show with Alzheimer's complication. Researchers eventually tried out a line of rats that were known to show age-related health issues, and the rat brains responded in a similar way to those of humans, developing tangles of brain cells and losing neurons. So, animal studies made famous by Calhoun in 1962 show that crowding in the animal world results in what he calls the behavior sink. Normal behavior and reproductive habits fail. Aggressive behavior increases when density passes a certain point as animals compete for resources. And in impoverished areas, whether it be rural or in urban, if you have to compete for resources, there's going to be a problem. In the experience of the reviewer, those who deny any possible connection between any human behavior simply say that humans are not animals, so there can be nothing learned from animal experiments. However, human animals do seem to exhibit much lower fertility rates in cities than is true in rural areas. So human beings in urban areas, the fertility rate is less than the people living in rural areas. So that's a crowded area, the urban area. And the rural area is more spread out. So there are similarities, even though people, one of the arguments is that, hey, we ain't rats. You know, when you're using a rat experiment to relate it to a human being, we do, it didn't have a lot of other attributes like, you know, humans experience, like racism, you know, classism, alcohol, drugs, and things like that, you know, abuse and things like that. But it got to behaviors of abusive behaviors and neglect and things like that through the population growth, which created the scarcity of resources. Calhoun's experiment with rodents, many experts are done with rodents in relationships to human, yet some disagree with the results of the test simply because humans are not rodents, as I just said. But they said, let's look at the heavily populated areas, migrations, and availability or lack of resources. Knowing that people commit crimes against people in their geographical area, blacks are murdered mostly by other blacks, and whites are murdered mostly by other whites because they live close to each other, right? Have we become our worst enemy? Some individuals profess to and demand respect without giving respect. Anger, frustration, irritation, and aggression appear to be prevalent in the behavior of many in the community. Negative behaviors that were once observed in smaller segments of the community appear to be practiced by a much larger segment of the community. I'm going to say that one more time. This is what we're seeing. This is from Provocative Thought. Negative behaviors that were once observed in smaller segments of the community appear to be practiced by a much larger segment of the community. It seems to be cool. You know, as a friend, I had a friend say it was cool to be, he thought it was square to be, it was cool, square to be, cool to be, square to be cool, he said now. He said, but he thought the opposite. You know, cool to be, now it's cool to be square. So it's, something like that. How did that thing go? Anyway, basically the coolness came with being, he said it's cool to be square, but he thought it was cool to be cool. Now he thinks it's cool to be square because the coolness as practiced, it was a very at-risk behavior. And he had to go through a lot of things, you know, and I'm not saying I was spared any of that myself, but I'm talking about my friend now. And just in case you're listening, but, you know, it's sometimes coolness is not what they say it is. Sometimes coolness is what they say it's not, you know. I think the Average on White Band had a song about that, you know, what's hip. So you got to be careful about what you subscribe to. Blacks living under the overt practices of Jim Crow segregation and degradation had their issues. Should black people be held accountable for some of the chaos in the black neighborhood and community? What do you think? Do you think that we should black people should be held accountable for something? Yeah, it doesn't matter. We know we've been slaves. We've been all many things in this country. Should black people be held accountable for some of the, you know, chaos in the community? Because I mean, okay, we come, okay, all right, so we were slaves. That was then. This is now. What we do to turn it around? You know, we're slaves. Now we're not in chattel slavery. You know what I'm saying? People aren't branding us. We branding ourselves now. You know, it seems so very similar, but that's another story. So I'm not going to get into that. The Free Dictionary says Jim Crow laws emerged in the southern states after the Civil War, first enacted in the 1880s by lawmakers who were bitter about their loss to the North and the end of slavery. The statutes separated the races in all walks of life, resulting in a legislative barrier to equal rights, created a system that favored whites and repressed blacks, an institutionalized form of inequality that grew in subsequent decades with help from the U.S. Supreme Court. Although the laws came under attack over the next half century, real progress against them did not begin until the court began to dismantle segregation. In the 1950s, remnants of the Jim Crow system were finally abolished in the 1960s through the efforts of the Civil Rights Movement. You remember Dr. Martin Luther King, Medgar Evers, and all them guys are marching. So, question is, in short, the separation but not equal rights for black. Life was devalued and a devalued life was there for all black people. So, is this one of the effects of poverty or failure to thrive in the social, political, economic arenas? A black man's life continued to be devalued. Lynching took place at public events, not in some secluded area. Lynchings consist of torturing, dismemberment, and murdering of a human being. Did the brutality of the American experience for black teach blacks in order to have power, they had to be brutal? That brutality was necessary in order to gain respect or to be feared. Are blacks simply fearful, selfish, and detached? What do we think? Alan West says, more black-on-black murders, and there were more black-on-black murders in 6 months than lynching in a 14-year period. By John Greenberg. This is from Pundit Fact in 2013. Using the 2012 FBI data and information from the Tuskegee Institute, neither of which is perfect, because we know a lot of this data on who killed who. No way we got a good number, an exact number on how many people actually were lynched or murdered. Some people murdered, you don't even know they murdered. They come up as missing. And for the ones that are not missed, they haven't even made the missing person list. So using the data anyway from the 2012 FBI data, West is someone off. They say he's off the numbers. There were approximately 2,936 black-on-black homicides in 6 months of 2012 and 3,446 black lynching from 1882 to 1896. These numbers do not include murders in which the perpetrator's ethnicity was unknown. So we're just talking about known murders here. Washington Post says researchers said they determined that 3,959 black people were killed in racial terror lynchings in a dozen southern states between 1877 and 1950. That's about 73 years in about 12 states, and there are probably more of them because we don't know. And the reason why I'm reading these numbers is because the numbers, you'll see. NAACP says from 1882 to 1968, 4,743 lynchings occurred in the United States. Of these people that were lynched, 3,446 were black. The blacks lynched accounted for 72.7% of people lynched. These numbers seem large, but it is known that not all of the lynchings were ever recorded. Now, you can imagine that. The guys have stringed you up, just seeing you on the side of the road, take you out of your house, saying like the way you look, you ain't move off the curb. You didn't look down or whatever. You bumped them, whatever. Well, they want what you got. They want your land. We don't know, what happened anyway. But amazingly, some lynchings were actually recorded and were big public events. Out of the 4,743 people lynched, only 1,297 were white people. That's 23.3%. Many of the whites lynched were lynched for helping the blacks or being anti-lynching and even for domestic crimes. The American Free Press estimated that 324,000 blacks have been murdered by other blacks in about 35 years up until 2014. At 35 years, 300,000 blacks murdered by blacks. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, that's a hell of a span right there. That's 35 years. We got 73 years, one of them, and with the lynchings and things like that. On the Daily Wire, PolitiFact says 93% of black homicide victims are killed by other blacks. There were almost 6,000 blacks killed by other blacks in 2015. Black crime rates were lower in the 1940s and 50s when black poverty was higher and racial discrimination was rampant and legal. And that's when they was hanging folks, I guess at will. I guess whenever they decided they had a notion that they needed to hang a brother, you know, the black crime rates were lower. That's the twist of that. That could be a twisted argument for racial discrimination. There are many other things that impact on the attitude and mental health of the black community. But I find that odd that the crime rates were lower in the 1940s and 50s when they were lynching people like you pick a piece of fruit from a tree. 93% of black homicide victims are killed by other three blacks, PolitiFact. Again, back to provocative thought. Have black people learned to debase the value of the life of a black person as a result of their history of slavery, Jim Crow, and the debased attitudes of the white community or political structure? Is that something that just has been internalized into black people? I remember a long time ago, people used to say, nigga ain't shit. You know, excuse my language. But, you know, I mean, are we victims of our captivity here? And I'm not making an excuse for the murders and all that, you know, that we do that to each other, the people that we kill, black or white, Asian, Hispanic. I'm not advocating that you murder anybody. But why do we not appear, or a segment of us not appear to value deeply the lives of other people, even our own lives? If you live in, a life is that promotes at-risk behavior. You know what I'm saying? Like, we're going to take this thug life thing. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, you're living a life where, you know, I remember my dad said to me, you know, when you walk down the street with this guy and somebody could just drive up and kill you, because that's the kind of life you live in, you know? And he was right, because people did drive up the street and try to kill me. You understand what I'm saying? You know, so why do we want to live that kind of life? That's not living. That's living to die. That's living waiting for that time period when either somebody walks up to you, rides up to you, kills you, or you do the same thing to somebody else. You know? So why are we perpetuating our own demise after or while living in a system that's perpetuating our untimely demise? Why do we not have a sense of unity, a sense of pride? And I don't mean that uppity pride. I mean a sense of I'm proud of who I am. I'm going, you know, and I'm going to do better for myself, my family, my wife, my community. Why do we not have this? Does anybody want to speak before the show goes off? Feel free to press the number one. I see we have a lot of callers. And I just want to know what y'all think about this, because black community is not a safe community for black people. And that is, to me personally, like, it's driving me crazy. Like, why? How did we come from being hung, you know, tortured, Emmett Till, young boy, taken out of the house, beaten to death, shot, thrown in the river, you know, Martin Luther King, Maker Evarts, murdered, trying to get us some, you know, some equal representation under the law, you know, some more, as they say, freedoms. And how did we just throw all that away? You know, Black Panthers, you know, came and said, hey, y'all can't treat us like that. But we treating us like that. You know, what is the thinking? What is the mentality? Is oppression the result of all of this? Is that the result that oppression is having on our community, on individuals in the community? Because we know some people in the community don't get involved in that kind of stuff. Some people are you know, they don't go for it. They're not interested in murdering people. They're not interested in being looked at as the guy who could beat anybody, who people fear. You know, they don't run and go get a gun every time something happens, or a knife, you know. And we know how things go. We don't want to accept defeat, apparently, at each other's hands. But meanwhile, that the defeat at the hands of the political system and people who are in power, we seem to accept that pretty good. You know, oh, you know, take that one with no grease. You know, so I don't understand it. I'm confused. Why can't we live together in a way that promotes our healthy lives, the healthy life of our children, of our families, of our communities? Why can't we grow? Where is our Tulsa, Oklahoma, Green Street community? Where is our Rosewood? Where they burnt Rosewood down, we couldn't do it again? Did they drop the bombs? Oh, we have a caller. Welcome to Provocative Thought.
Hello?
Hello? Yeah, hello. How you doing?
This is Q. Can you hear me?
Q, yeah, yeah, Carl? Q. How you doing, man?
Good.
All right.
Yeah, I think, like you said, they don't know who they are. They think they're supposed to be everything in the videos and the movies say they're supposed to be, you know. They're supposed to be Shaft and Superfly and everything like that. And all those super smooth dudes from the videos with all the stacks of money and everything, and they confused. You know, they don't have like that weekly sermon at the end of the week. And I think that's I think that is that sermon. You know, everything they listening to in those songs, like every day, all day. You know, they listening to the wrong things, and they just mixed up. And they're paying the heavy price. We all paying the price, but they're paying the heaviest price, you know, with their lives and their freedoms.
Right. That's right. Yeah, you know, because I've seen some of the videos, and I think guys are just making videos. I don't even think you have to be a rap artist to make a video now. You got the money, you can make a video or something, you know what I'm saying? So I've seen some of the videos, the guys flashing money, got these guns, you know, ARs and AKs and, you know, got all these pistols, and I'm like, really? You know, and I couldn't hear everything they were saying, but, you know, I don't hear anything in the defense of the community. Everything that they appear to be doing is things that tear a community down, because if you sell dope to your own people, you're tearing them down. You know, they gave alcohol to the Indians, and it tore the Indians down. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Not that they didn't get high before they met, introduced the alcohol. Not the point. Point is, they helped them. You know what I'm saying? They used that as a weapon. That's biological, chemical warfare. You know, so I'm drugs in the community, debt in the community. You cannot function at your highest potential if you are on drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, it's tearing you down mentally and physically. You know, so, you know, why, how did we get this, you know, because I remember, you know, because coming out of the 60s, the 60s was the everybody was fighting for something, 60s and the 70s, trying to be something, trying to get something, trying to come up. So, you know, what were we trying to do? You know, because we have more millionaires now than we had back in the 19, when they were stringing people up on these trees all the time, right?
Right.
But it seems like, you know, instead of being murdered and by the Ku Klux Klan per se and getting lynched, we lynching ourselves.
Yep.
You know, that's what it seems like. I mean, you can look at it that way.
I think at a more proficient rate than the Ku Klux Klan ever did.
Right. We better. That's right. And that's partially because the Ku Klux Klan doesn't live in the neighborhood. They don't have the proximity as we do to each other. So when we decide to do that to ourselves, it's going to be in great numbers.
Right.
Okay. I have a caller. Hold on, Q. I got a caller on 9042. Welcome to Provocative Thought.
Hello? Do you hear me?
Yes, hello. Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
Yes, I can.
I think there's so many reasons why, but one of the things that stand out to me that if you don't love yourself, I don't mean a prideful way, you don't have a hope, then you love to do anything. And I think that's one of the problems. A lot of our millennials, 18 and under 18, they don't go to no spiritual foundations, things that give them hope and encouragement. You have to have that in your life, no matter what your economics is, whether you be poor, middle class, upper middle class. Those things keep you going and keep you not having so much conflict with others, because you have a peace about you built on hope. So that's one of the problems I see that's happening with Afro-Americans. They're not part of anything that's spiritual. In my case, I'm a believer, and I go to church on a regular basis, and I'm hearing sermons, you know, that give me hope. When I leave there, I leave the church feeling that I can make it. And once that's lost in the individual, he or she allows us to do anything and do. So that's my thoughts on that topic. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Thanks for calling in. Okay, so there you have your caller says that we are godless. Well, people who are godless and they have no spiritual connection. So that you agree with that, right?
I agree. That's basically what I was trying to say, the same thing.
Right. Yeah, I can agree with that too, because seems money, chaos has become the gods of a certain segment of the black community, and but you know, like coming out of the school, the elementary school used to be a fight every day coming out of the school, every day a fight, police sitting out there fight, you know, that doesn't make sense.
Hello?
You know, I mean, that was like, you know, we had fights back in the day, but we wasn't always fighting like that. You know, cops
right.
Got to sit outside the school, in elementary school, you know, that wasn't even happening in the high school, you know?
Right.
No, you know, so what is happening to us? We dropped the ball somewhere after they killed our leaders. They killed our spokespersons, Martin, Mecca Edwards, you know, they just killed them. Malcolm X. When they killed them, they destroyed the Black Panther Party, that which was reborn again. They have a new Black Panther Party out now, but it's not the same as it used to be, because I remember when I come outside my house, I could get a Black Panther paper, you know what I'm saying? You could get that and read that.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very much available. It's not like it used to be, you know? And,
mm-hmm.
You know, we had the Muhammad speech. Now, Farrakhan is trying to say some, though he's a controversial figure, he is still trying to, he has some very good topics in their paper, you know. And we just, you know, dropped the ball. To me, it seemed like once it's like they killed our hearts and we just gave it up. To me, that's what it seemed like. To me, everybody just went for, okay, well, let me see, I'm just going to do me. You know, and some people just doing them on a positive way. I'm going to get my education. I'm going to become this. I'm going to become that. I'm becoming this. I'm doing me. You know, and I know some of the rappers, they do contribute to communities and things like that. I know some of them guys do stuff for people and stuff like that. So, You know, I don't know. You know, I used to think, you know, maybe we're not doing enough. You know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I mean, we've been in worse situations than this, and we weren't killing each other, and that's a good point that this one guy made, and that I read that, hey, how come when the man had his foot on our neck, we wasn't killing each other? Maybe we didn't have the ability to do it. We just didn't get it. We had the potential to do it. We had the ability to do it back then. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that was it. You know. But you know what happened to? We didn't get another Black Wall Street. Where's Black Wall Street at? That one time they showed you it could be done in under worse conditions. They showed you,
mm-hmm.
right? We got what? We got billionaires. People open to billionaire, right? A couple people got some a lot of money. You know what I'm saying? Now that's individual money. We talking about collective money. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Where's that collective? Black collective community, because once you started a community of people helping each other, that can just grow. One community, two communities, three. Next thing you know, you got a county. You know what I'm saying? Next thing you know, you got, you know, grows. You know what I'm saying? Then you get that. Maybe you develop that place that's a refuge for black people who want to live a decent life. You want to live without getting murdered, robbed, you know, trying to get back and forth. You know, come on. You know, there's some good people, you know, in the penal system because of people who choose that lifestyle. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Hold on. We got another call. I think this is Mr. Jones. Welcome to
hey,
the Box
what's
of
up?
Thought.
Hey, what's up, Carlton? Can you hear me?
What's up, Brother Kenny? Yeah. How you doing?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to tell you. We were making a whole lot, and we continue to make a whole lot of progress. But I think what really began to destroy our communities, two things: crack and the criminal justice system. I'm going to say this one more time. Crack, which you got to remember, Ronald Reagan, man, was instrumental joining the Black Panther Party. He's the one who started SWAT. And SWAT now is an international law enforcement agency. And is it coincidence? I don't believe a coincidence. But is it coincidence that when he was president, crack became a big thing? And check this out. When the Black Panther Party were was really striving and getting messages out, really organizing. Heron, it was chemical warfare. Heron,
right.
Crack, chemical warfare. Now, the rich white community, yes, and to the larger institutions, that just collateral damage. That's all
right.
It is. And I think during the crack era, It brought out the values of our communities and our families, put a lot of black men in prison, 2 million to be exact. And now the result from the crack epidemic is gentrification. We don't even have complete neighborhoods no more, like Harlem, Bed-Stuy, Charleston City, at one time they'll try to get North Philly. I don't know if they succeeded, but they're kicking out our neighborhoods and whatnot and displacing us in these suburbs and what have you. And now what they call inner suburbs, what sociologists call inner suburbs. So I think it's just I just think it's a, just a yes, I think we just caught up. And then you got to remember one thing. Media plays a big part in the way we think, the way we interact, the way we dress, the way we articulate ourselves. Media is a very powerful tool to brainwashing. And they tell us, successful blacks, yo, man, you don't need to be with them. You need to come with us.
Right.
Live like us. You could go to our schools. In fact, we give you some of these white girls you can marry. You know, and they're taking really positive images away from us. With W.E.B. Du Bois said the 10%, but the 10% is going to them.
Right.
Where you know, you ever heard this expression that the minority will lead and the majority will reap the rewards? That was supposed to be the W.E.B. Du Bois 10%. But that 10% now, the other cultures are wreaking the wars. And I think I think we got to change our thinking. I think we got to be consistent in our presentation. And we're going to meet a lot of resistance. We really cannot live a lifestyle like them. Because you said earlier, what's going on in the smaller community is exhibit what's going on in the larger realm. Violence. Our country's in about 6 wars, man. Afghanistan, right. Syria, Iran, North Korea. You know, I mean, I can't even, I don't even know that what, that's 4? There's a couple of few more.
and the ones you don't know about, right?
Right, because there's, you got to remember, just, you know, when I see two countries fighting each other, I say, which one of the United States is backing? Whoever got the bigger gun, is coming, the United States is backing. So therefore, we're a violent country. Guess what? Of course, we're going to have violent communities. But see, and I blame the religious leaders. I blame the politicians. Because let me tell you something, a lot of local leaders are black. You know, and I can remember one, next to the last speech that Martin gave, he said, I hope I'm not leaving my people in a burning house.
Okay, and I got one more call, man. I'm trying to get him in.
Okay, go ahead. All right. Go ahead.
All right. 4159, welcome to Provocative Thought.
Hey, how's it going there?
All right, how you doing?
Let me give you my thoughts on the tail end of this. I heard what Brother Kenny was saying, and I'm going to chime in on some of what he's saying, that you talked about the crack epidemic and the drugs, but the thing about that is that the drugs didn't hit every single person in the community. What did hit every single person in the community is the idea of leaving the community. I'm going to get my money.
True.
I'm going to move over here with the white folks. So when
True.
You leave, you don't have a community. You don't have a neighborhood.
Black flight. Black
so
flight.
That means there's no money. And protection comes from having money. It's not about the politicians. The politicians go wherever the money's going. Black folks have the money, but they use their money to support every other thing but the black community, because they don't have any stakes in the black community, meaning they're not
True.
Buying and owning the homes. They're not owning the businesses. They're not interested in providing money to the schools. They're interested in spending the money to acquire wealth to look like the same people who depress them. I want to look like
True.
Whitey, as to say.
True.
So therefore, if you're chasing to look like that person, you can't be chasing to provide for yourself. So, of course, you're going to have destruction in your own community because you're destroying it. You don't have a community.
That's right. That's right.
You're not with your people. And as far as saying that the churches or the mosques or any of those people. Okay. Well, that's my take on it.
All right. I want to thank everybody for calling
two,
in. All right. We're here next week. We're here next week. Come back.
All right.
I want to thank everybody for calling in. Mr. Kenny Jones.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will
will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruption. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the shape of a war theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Report from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Churches will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.